a good meal from some French family that was still living there, a farmer.
Well, did you like the French, and did you get on well with the French?
Oh, yes. I've got a picture of one of my French friends. Oh, yes, I got along well with the French.
Mm-hmm.
One working party I was sent to in Germany, there were no other Canadians or British. I were all Frenchmen. I had to speak French all the time.
Did you? Could you speak French before?
Oh, well, I learned that a little. I'm not good at it enough, but I mean, I could get along, yeah. And I learned enough German to get along with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best, one of the best commanders I was on. But we escaped from there. Frenchman and a fellow named Cameron from the 3rd Battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And the Frenchman got fed up and he left us and took all our biscuits one night when we were asleep.
That was darn nice of him, wasn't it?
But we managed. We had chocolate left and we got over that then.
Mm-hmm.
We got right over it.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little while if we can, but tell me about the Battle of Ypres.
The which?
The Battle of Ypres.
The battle.
Oh, the battle.
Yeah.
Well, it's the most confused thing. Of course, I didn't know about battles. I think, you see, the training that we got wasn't really...
of a practical nature?
No. We learned more from when we were talking to the other privates in the front line when we went in for experience than we ever did from any of the officers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the training was good, and the consequence was, you see, that there was a most horrible mix-up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, they made a marvelous job of it. I mean, they held the Germans off for 3 days
mm-hmm.
after that gas attack.
Yeah.
But I don't think we would have been captured if we'd had the Enfield rifles.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't put up any fight at all.
Yeah. It just clogged on you and you...
Mm.
Yeah. Well, you were in the 2nd Brigade, weren't you?
2nd Brigade, yeah.
And at the beginning of the battle, were you in reserve or were you in the line?
We were in reserve.
Mm-hmm.
We could see the clouds of gas, you know. We didn't know what it was. And we could see the French colonial regiment, Zouaves. They were, you know...
They were from Algeria, weren't they?
Hmm?
They were the Algerians.
Algerians, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were retiring. What could they do? They had no gas masks.
Yeah.
And this gas had we'd choke them to death if they stayed there, so they were retired.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody blamed them. And then the Canadians had to go and take over as best they could, but they couldn't get right up into the old trenches.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, they held them for 3 days. And I think I don't think that we'd have been captured if we'd been able to, if we'd had Lanfield rifles.
Mm-hmm. Well, your battalion, were you sent right into the line after the Algerians withdrew?
Well, I was in the machine gun section.
Mm-hmm.
The 2nd Brigade, I mean the second, the company that, B Company or whatever it was that was out. Some of our men were in their front line trenches,
mm-hmm.
and some were in reserve. Well, of course, the people that were in reserve had to be moved up to where the French had retired,
mm-hmm.
and other places where they were needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we never were with the regiment after that. We were sent out to strategic places
mm-hmm.
with these guns, these crossroads. I forget the name of the place now. But it's all written up in the book,
mm-hmm.
Hazelbrook or something.
Yeah.
And there were crossroads there, you see, and they were afraid the Germans might come up, and so they stationed the machine gun section there. And then we were moved a couple of times to more strategic places, and then finally the last gun went up and took position up where Bellew got his Victoria Cross.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did it all strike you? I mean, how did you react to all this? Were you scared, or were you...
Well, you're always a little scared, you know, when you're when the shells are going. You never know when you're going to get hit.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wouldn't say that I was exactly scared.
I guess you didn't have time to.
No, we were busy, you see, moving around, and we had to do the little chores like making tea and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my job, there was no use for it because we didn't have to take any ranges. We had a bar and Stroud instrument that works on triangulation, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we would sight it onto whatever the target they wanted to, and we could get a reading of how far it was, you see, and then you could adjust your gun to that. That was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I got quite a kick out of that job, but they gave me that job. And then I was sent out to instruct other people on the use of this Burn Stroud instrument.
Mm-hmm.
In my first class, the first fellow I talked to was the surveyor. He probably knew more about Burn Stroud instruments and triangulation than I'd ever been. We laughed about it. I told him, I said, you should be doing this job.
So you ended up, I guess, on the other end of a Ross rifle, firing it instead of doing your range finding.
Yeah. Well, as I say, a wonderful target rifle. Wonderful rifle for probably all right for a hunting rifle, too.
Mm-hmm.
But
it clogged.
But not for military purposes.
Mm-hmm. Were you overrun, your position?
Hmm?
When you were captured, was your position overrun by the Germans?
Well, I had retreated to this trench that was not really a trench, it was just hastily dug.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a mixture of Canadians and different groups that had to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't defend ourselves, so the officer said, just put up a white flag. We couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
We had nothing to fire with.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't use bayonets because the Germans were about 100 yards away and firing at us and coming closer.
Mm-hmm. So you surrendered.
So that way, they just lined us up and they marched us back to a place called Reuters.
Mm-hmm. When you put the white flag up and you surrendered, was there any aggressiveness on the Germans? Did they shoot anyone, or did they?
No, not bad. I mentioned it in the that interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Have you read it?
Yes, I have.
No, they. I can't say that the treatment. You got to remember that things are very confused and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Germans take a bunch of prisoners, they're all their normal practices changes. They have to look after the prisoners and march them back, get them back, and then reform to get ready to advance again.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it'd be pretty difficult to look after us. That is, look after things like feeding us and providing sanitation and that kind of thing. So we just had to do with the best we could.
Mm-hmm.
Which was.
I was going to say, you were also wounded during the battle, weren't you?
I was only wounded very slightly. Not necessary for me to go to a hospital or anything. Just a dressing on it.
Was it a shrapnel wound, or was it?
No, it was a bullet through my wrist, right through there.
Through the bone itself?
Missed the bone.
Lucky. Mm. So it was a flesh wound, in other words?
Mm, just a flesh wound.
Yeah. And they dressed it for you, the Germans?
They dressed it after the second day.
After the second day?
Yeah.
Did they help other more serious cases?
Did they what?
Would they help other more serious cases?
Oh, yes. The more serious cases they took to hospital.
Mm-hmm. So they were good about that, then?
Mm-hmm. Well, they were reasonable, quite reasonable.
Well, it was different from the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. More chivalrous.
They observed the Geneva Convention, and every Red Cross parcel was delivered, even when the Germans had little food,
mm-hmm.
and not opened or anything.
Yeah.
An interesting thing about the Red Cross parcels, you see, first of all, when we first got to Germany, am I going ahead too far?
No, that's fine.
Our friends used to send us parcels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they used to send us things that they really shouldn't have, you see. They should have been careful about buying things because they were getting short of things in England too with the submarine warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, after thinking it over, they decided that instead of letting private people send parcels, that they would handle it all through the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Cross would send parcels every so often with enough food in that would give them rations for the period between parcels.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of cutting private parcels out completely, they allowed them to send one a month,
mm-hmm,
of things like razor blades and little things like that. So,
yeah. I read in your interview that bread was often sent, but by the time it got to you, it was moldy and they couldn't eat it.
That's right. Well, now, the Red Cross arranged for that to go through Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And the Swiss didn't know how to pack it.
Yeah.
Because it got moldy.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to get biscuits from the French. The French used to get all kinds of biscuits, and these biscuits you could dampen, mm-hmm, and leave out in the sun, and they'd
soften up, I guess.
They'd jump up into a great big bun.
Really?
So we used to buy them from the French,
mm-hmm,
using some of our canned meat and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't get the canned stuff that we got. And we used to get canned stuff from everywhere, from Argentina, Mexico, Australia,
mm-hmm,
you see. And then when we went out to the parties, we'd take our parcels with us, you see, and have a meal on the train, and there'd be a bunch of Germans watching us, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd say, how did we get this stuff? We said, your submarine didn't stop this. It came from Australia. your submarine didn't stop this. It came from Argentina.
Yeah.
Boy, they didn't like that.
No, I bet not. Yeah. Well, tell me, you mentioned the trip to Germany in the train, that you were in cattle cars?
Yes, cattle cars.
That must have been a very rough journey.
Well, there again, you see, what are you going to do? They could hardly put us in first-class carriages.
True.
Because they were shifting troops all over the place.
Yeah.
Themselves. So they... It was tough. I mean, we couldn't... There were no toilets on the thing, and you were shut up there. We were shut up there all day, maybe for 24 hours at a time.
They wouldn't let you out to stretch?
No.
Yeah. Well, where were you sent in Germany?
We sent to a camp in Gießen.
Gießen.
And I've got a photograph of it here somewhere. There. There it is. And you can see that's the way the buildings were made.
So the brick on the bottom.
Brick on the bottom and then batten.
Look fairly substantial, don't they?
Well, they were good buildings. Way better than the accommodation we had anywhere in England.
Mm-hmm. From this photograph, it looks as if that's a streetcar right there. Was there a town very close by, or was it in the center of a town?
Yeah, that's a streetcar. We never got a ride in them. We walked out.
Mm-hmm.
That was divided into 10 companies.
Mm-hmm.
I was in 10 companies.
How many men were at Gießen?
Well, they were supposed to hold. There were five of these huts, long huts. They must have been about 30 feet wide and about, 200 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to hold 250 men. Each camp was supposed to hold 1,000. But there would be more people attached to that camp because they would send people out to work, prisoners of war,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them stayed out to work all the time they were there.
Yeah.
Now, the fellow I escaped with, he was sent out to a farm, and he got on to a very nice place, and he stayed out there until I came, and we got friendly, and I asked him if he wanted to come with me, because I knew nobody else but this Frenchman.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Sault Ste. Marie, wasn't he?
Yeah, he came from Sault Ste. Marie. And so he said yes. And that's the first time he tried to escape, and we got over it.
Mm-hmm. You had been five times before and been captured every time, right?
Six times?
That was my seventh time.
Was it? Yeah. Well, what had this been before? What had Giessen been before it was a prison camp?
University and... And this was a great big plan. You can see how flat it is. And this is where they had a regiment there.
It was a barracks before the war.
That was a military training ground.
Oh, I see.
There were still lots of it left further over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it was. And a university.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was life like in the camp in terms of sanitation and food?
At first, of course, until we got something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Their food was terrible. Soup, well, nothing in the morning, except coffee. Then they gave you this loaf, which had to be divided between five men.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have seen the way some of them cut them. And then they'd cut a little piece off the big piece and put it on the small piece to try and get it even.
Yeah.
And they waste a lot of crumbs on the doing it.
But we
used to cut it, and then sometimes you got a big, little bigger than the others, and sometimes you got a smaller, so we didn't care.
Yeah, would even
help me in. And now what we used to do in the tent camps, we had messes.
Mm-hmm.
Four or five or six or even eight fellas would go together, and they would put all their food into their cupboard,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody would be delegated to cook one day.
Mm-hmm.
And he would cook for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you had a mess like that, it was very seldom that all were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I belonged to one. I used to be away a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you about one interesting thing. After we'd been there about 6 months,
mm-hmm.
we started to talk about trying to escape. And you know, even then, we used to be able to get English papers once in a while. The Germans got them from Holland, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And they gave them to
you? Hmm?
They gave them to
you? Yeah. And I got a hold of a London Opinion, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And in that issue, there was an advertisement for a compass,
mm-hmm.
that you could fasten on your wrist, just like a wristwatch.
Yeah.
Which was illuminated, and they called it the guiding star.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a letter to my uncle, and I asked him if he would get me a book called The Guiding Star, because I wanted to train myself to be an accountant after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was a compass. I said, you'll find out all about it if you look in that issue of the London Opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they sent the letter to go through. And my uncle, he went out and got it.
Mm-hmm. And sent it, and that got through?
And then he sent me a parcel. And he put the compass in the middle of a pot of strawberry jam.
Yeah.
And then sealed it up again. When it came through, but just at the time as it came through, I was out. I was doing time in prison. I was in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But 21 days. Sometimes they called me an under officer and I got late set. I don't know why. Some mistake they made.
Mm-hmm.
But what just happened that our mess had a lot of extra food.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave some away to some mess that didn't have any. They were new, you see.
And
amongst it was this pot of strawberry jam. But they... You know, we never had any trouble about ownership in prisoners of war. There was never any theft or anything like that.
amongst the British? Because I hear you mention that the Italians...
Well, I don't know. We didn't go over the Italians.
Yeah, well, you say in here that the Italians on occasion would come over and steal some food.
Did I say so?
Yeah.
Maybe I did. But anyway, we didn't have any Italians in our
barracks.
And you couldn't blame the Italian because they had nothing. Mm. I'm talking about the British that were...
With you.
Yeah. And the Canadians. And this fellow, well, of course, when they came down to the middle of the storm again, they found this camp, you see, and they knew that it should come back. So they brought it back, and I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I used it for 4 times. I ordered a dandy compass.
Well, didn't the Germans take it from you?
Well, we used to pass it to somebody or hide it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I was going through, after I was captured, I was taken to another prisoner of war camp, and I happened to be talking to him through the wire to another prisoner while the guard was giving his credentials to the guard at the gate, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I told this fellow, I said, take this compass, they'll search me. So I gave it to him. 2-3 days later, he found out where I was and gave me back. And then when there was a search in camp, we had a little garden there, you see. They had a little garden they used to show to the ambassadors from the States or Italy or in the camera. And I used to pull up one of the plants and put the compass in there. All right.
Well, the Germans...
That's why I learned gardening. So they gave the compass back and I got it.
Yeah.
Now, I used it, and when I got back to England after I escaped, I bought a haversack to put all my stuff in. I had all these pictures, some of these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and some maps, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you about the maps some other time. And the maps that I used to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And I put everything like that in this haversack. And I was sent to Buxton.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they had sent you prior to returning you to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my haversack on my bed, went to lunch, and when I came back, it was gone. So I lost everything.
Oh, God.
So sad that the compass went.
What a nice keepsake,
wasn't it? Wasn't it wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah.
The compass was no good to them. I don't know whether they could have sold it, but under the compass used to lift out. You could lift the compass out of the case,
mm-hmm.
and underneath was the half sovereign in gold. They'd use that quick enough.
All that, yeah. Well, tell me about the Germans. Sound as if they were very laxed with security around the camp.
Yes, they had. I know you're going to see them. They had raised platforms. I think you can see one right there.
Sort of like the gun towers we think of.
And they'd have a couple of sentries up there with guns, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, who was going to try and jump the fence? I mean, if they could have jumped, they might just well let them go because they would have... It was almost impossible to get out of the main.
Yeah. And I suppose if you did get out, you were in the middle of Germany to begin with.
Yeah.
So it would be very difficult to get to Switzerland.
That's
or
right.
Back.
And it took me 3 or 4 trips to learn what I had to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
See, and then we finally formed a little organization, which we called the You Know What Society, to help people escape, to collect maps, collect... first aid kits and things that a fellow would need.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if we knew that the man was going to make a bona fide attempt to escape, we'd sit down and talk to him and tell him what he had to look out for, what food to take,
mm-hmm.
how to avoid towns and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
did you have good maps of the surrounding area?
Well, I have a letter somewhere here. We're from Well, I don't know where. But anyway, this fella Durand sent me one of these postcards,
mm-hmm.
in which he said that they had, after I got back, you see, and I had this interrogation, I told that officer that about it. He didn't put that in there, of course.
Yes, sir, is it mentioned Durant's? Hmm? Durant's?
He didn't.
Durant's? I think he's mentioned it here.
But he didn't mention that. But he did. He sent them some maps through and tin the biscuits or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this fellow, friend of mine, wrote me and told me that he'd received them.
Yeah.
And then the French were very good at getting things. I don't know. They're clever people.
Mm-hmm.
Now the first thing they did, they give us money that we could buy things from the German canteen in our camp.
Mm-hmm.
And first, they had a few things, you see. They gradually got so that they couldn't sell anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave us this German money, prisoner of war money. And they were like a postage stamp, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like there were so many pennies for each one, you see. The French got some through to France, and they had hundreds and thousands printed. They sent them back to the prisoners. The Germans, of course, had to cancel the money, and they issued a new kind of money, which was more like a dollar bill, except that it wasn't green.
Mm-hmm.
But and it was small. Apparently, we got this new kind of money then. See, they used to pay us when we went out. Apparently, in their book, it said they had to pay you.
Yeah.
So we used to get about 10 pennies a day or something like that. And they used to give you this money, you see, and you could use it in stores in town,
mm-hmm.
if you could get in, mm-hmm. if you had to be able to get in.
Yeah. Did you have relative freedom when you were out working on a farm? Like, could you go into stores in a small town?
The best place where I had the most freedom when I was working in a vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans, you see, instead of, they're the first place, this is the first place in Germany that I ever heard of the morning coffee drinking. I've heard of afternoon tea.
Mm-hmm.
But they, in the morning, at about 10 o'clock, they have what they call coffee drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have their noon meal, and then they have coffee drinking, and then the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So you stop for a few minutes for three times during the day before you go. So at this place, you see, instead of giving you coffee, they gave you the seconds, wine.
Mm-hmm.
They make the first batch of wine out of the grapes, and then they pour water on what's left and make a milder, cheap wine.
Yeah.
And that is what they gave us, but it was intoxicating.
Yeah.
So the fellow took a fancy to me, and he said, now look, you go in every day to the winery, and talk to the man there, and he'll give you a jug of wine to bring back for you to drink at 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, did I have a time. I went in there, and you see, and the fellow said, would you like a drink? So I used to have two or three good slugs of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd fill my bottle and go back. Well, the first time I passed the store, I noticed that it had bishops in it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little creek that ran down the bottom of where the grapes were, grape plants were on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And you used to work up the hill, you see, and drag the earth down and take the weeds out. Up at the bottom was this little creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the fish in it.
Yeah.
So after I'd been two or three times and nobody said anything, I dropped into the store and I asked him if he'd take my German money for a few fish hooks. He said, sure. So he gave me the fish hooks. And, you know, I learned to tickle trout. Have you ever tickled trout?
Yeah.
In the Isle of Man? But I felt, well, if you could tickle them, we could probably catch them on a hook. So I got a worm, stuck it on the hook, and tied a little piece of string on there. On the hook,
mm-hmm.
with a float, and attached at the one end to a good big heavy stone. And I put out about three of those.
Mm-hmm.
Next day there were two fish. So I put it in my pocket and went home. And got the woman to cook for us there to
cook up some.
Cook them up. She did.
Good.
No, I gave her a piece of soap. And
she welcomed that more than a hunk of gold.
Yeah, really?
The poor thing had a baby and no soap.
No, if you were so inclined, you could get a woman for soap. They were crazy about getting it. They couldn't wash their babies with except this coarse sand soap.
Yeah.
And I gave this woman whose daughter had just had a baby, I gave her a great big piece of Castile soap.
Yeah.
Oh, they would have done anything for me.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, sir. You mentioned that you tried to escape six times, and on the seventh you succeeded.
Yeah.
Why were you so keen on escaping? Because as a private, it wasn't your duty to escape in the way that it was an officer's.
Well, just to beat the Germans, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be beat. I didn't agree with working, you see, because I knew that if you worked steady, you were replacing a German who could be sent to the front. So I spent in the three years I was in Germany, I spent about 150 days in jail, mm-hmm. either for escaping or refusing to work or for not working, you know, just fooling around.
Mm-hmm. Did you actively try and destroy things or slow?
Well, maybe you better not put that in anything. And we did. Yes, we destroyed hundreds of marks with this stuff.
Really?
We worked in one place that they were putting in a lock near Mainz. And, well, we refused to work there, but they got the guns out and they said, one, two, three, back to work or else. So we went back to work. So we decided that there was more than one way to kill a cat, so we killed it.
Yeah.
And the best of it was, you see, they'd miss shovels and the tools would disappear and tools
and
would
the
be
wheelbarrows.
Broken wheelbarrows. And they thought the Germans were stealing them and taking them home.
Yeah. Well, how did the Germans...
And yet, one day, an officer was came around, he was watching another man, me, work.
Mm-hmm.
And they always had a dog with them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he couldn't beat us up, but he beat the devil out of his poor dog because he was so mad.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible?
It is.
Another thing we did, you see, they told us that no sand must go in it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it would leak.
Yeah. So, I guess it was sand.
They were crazy to tell us that because sand went in, and when they got started to use it, it was no good. It leaked.
Mm-hmm. Little things like that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you about another. Meshed,
mm-hmm.
this is where the Frenchman is. They dug a tunnel out from their camp,
mm-hmm.
right out to a growth of bushes and things outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they had engineers, you see. All their men that they conscript don't always get put into the job, so you might find a private who was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
They lighted the tunnel from the electric power in the camp. And, you know, the Germans used to pick people that they thought were favorable to them as sort of orderlies.
Mm-hmm.
And they would give them the job of counting the prisoners,
mm-hmm.
and looking after them, you see,
yeah.
and reporting when they were all present at night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got this tunnel dug, and then at a suitable time, there were about 120 escaped one day.
Ooh.
Well, instead of reporting 120, you see, they decided that it would be better to report about seven at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So this order would be reported, seven fellows had escaped. So the officer in charge of the camp, well, we have to put a little extra put, instead of having two one private by himself, have two at each point now, night. Mm-hmm. Next morning, 8 more escaped.
And on and on and on.
They reported 8 more, you see. They reported 7 and then 8, and they kept on reporting a few every day. So the officer in charge didn't think the privates were any good, so he put corporals in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And they still went on escaping, so he put sergeants in charge. They still went on escaping, so he put lieutenants in charge. And they finally got up to a major outside.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, that's usually in the old
noggin here.
Driving them crazy.
So can I stop you for a second? I want to turn the tape over.
Yeah.